Welcome to episode 15 of the SVAPA podcast. Here are your hosts, Michael and Joe.
Hi everyone, it's Michael here for episode 15 of the SVOPA podcast for August 2013. And we've got Joe here as well today.
Hi everyone.
Hi Joe, how has your last month been?
Hot. I got sunburnt, but it's been lovely.
It has actually, it's been absolutely gorgeous. Weather's coming, getting a bit worse. Why do we always start talking about weather?
Just, I know.
Because we're British, yeah. Isn't it? You know.
It is. We're never happy though, but yeah, I've been happy this month. It's been beautiful.
I know, I've told a few people, you're no moaning, you're not allowed to complain at the weather.
No, definitely not.
No, and we've also got Bonnie in the background as well, if you haven't already heard her snoring.
Yeah, apologies for that. She's very vocal tonight because she's been for a long walk today, so she's knackered.
Which you can hear about on your audio book, aren't you, if you're following Joe?
You can.
What have we got coming up this time, Joe?
We've got an interview with Josie Lynch, who loads of you will remember. She worked at St Vincent's for, I think it was 22 years. A very candid interview, which takes you through her whole life, really, up to current times. The quality isn't brilliant, but it's still worth taking a listen to. We've got an update on the events, as always. We've got a recording from Jim Moran that he did at the prize giving at school, because he actually went along to give out the prizes, didn't he?
He did, yes. And we've also got a new section, which we're calling Round the School in 10 Lessons. And we've got a bit of stuff on Site Village and a few other things we're just going to throw in there to keep you happy for the next whatever it takes, next hour or so. So,
if you want to get in touch, contact us, podcast@svopa.co.uk. As always, your podcast, we love hearing from you.
We do. So should we go to the news? We're going to actually hand to Jim with, unfortunately, some sad news. We're going to start with the news today.
Here are some news items.
Hi, this is Jim Moran for SVOPA. And some very sad news. I learned this week the death of John Southern. He went to St Vincent's between 1953 and 64. John was at school with me, and we were good friends in school. In fact, when we left school, we put together the Idle Hours Band, which went for many, many years, and we did several records that have been heard on previous newsletters. And John was tremendously interested in his music and radio, had lots of fond memories of school and of lots of the people who he knew in school. I've been speaking to him recently, once or so a month, because I'm phoning him up in Canada, which is where he lived since 1976. John leaves behind Sue, his second wife, and Bernadette, his first, together with two sons, Richard and Michael, and daughter Moira. He'll be sadly missed. He was one of those guys who everybody had something good to say about him. He was really a very, very nice, gentle child and a very nice, gentle man, and always remained so. He'd not been well over the last few years and needed a wheelchair to get out and about in Canada. He had hoped to get over to England and especially to come back to a past pupils reunion. I think the last one he was at was about 2000 or maybe a little bit earlier than that, so some people may remember him from that. But John will be sadly missed, and I'm sure all of those who knew him will miss him. Hopefully, I'll be back with better news for the next bulletin.
Well, we've had some nice news from Jenny Newman. She wanted you all to know that she's in a relationship now with Jamie Russell White. So congratulations, you guys, and hopefully you will be together for a long time to come.
Why not email us at podcast@svupa.co.uk.
Well, as you know, it's your podcast, and we want your input. So we're going to actually have an interview in a moment with Chris. But anything you want to include, you know, be that a relationship, a marriage, even if it's sad news or something you've just achieved, you know, let us have it, because like I said, I want to share what you guys are doing. So without further ado, we're going to move over to our interview with Chris. About to wrap up everything for the podcast for this month, but we had a message off Chris Lyon, and he wanted to join us, so we've managed to get hold of him at the last minute. So how are you doing, Chris?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad, thanks.
Well, we thought we'd talk a little bit about school, and you did the 2-minute challenge as well, so you were talking about a music project you're doing, and you're also doing some mobility training as well at the moment with potential of a guide dog, so we'll cover that as well. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about, you know, when you were at school, and just a couple of things you liked and you know, disliked, or little memories, if you don't mind?
Yeah, my school experience was very, very mixed. And for those of you who heard the last podcast of myself, which is quite brief, will know that I had a mix of good and bad experiences. And I would say from the moment of the first day that I started, I've quite enjoyed infant school. It was kind of, you know, I'd only just lost my sight a few months before I'd even attended like my first day of school. So it was still kind of getting used to that, and just kind of trying to appreciate that, you know, for the first time in my life, there's actually people around me that are in the same or similar situation to myself. And I didn't actually make my first real friend until I got to year two. But that was cool, because we'd kind of been friends now for donkey's years. And then I got to year three, and I don't know, a lot of people ask me what subjects they like and what didn't I like, and for many years I was quite fascinated by science and nature and various things in that area, and then I got very drawn towards music and history. Geography was never really my field. I was never that particularly good at geography, although I did my best. And English and maths was quite average for me. I got on as well as I could with my peers, but after Sister Josephine left, I just couldn't gel with the way that the school was changing. The fact that a lot of things were being relaxed, and some things that, like the activities in secondary school, were great. You know, there was things like, it was Young Engineering, there was Cookery Club, there was all sorts. And then when this new headmaster after Sister Josephine came, things did started changing, and rather than get better, it got worse. And by year 12, I couldn't tolerate anymore. So it was either a choice of carry on and get more frustrated, or leave and go on to better things. But while I was at school, two of the things I enjoyed were music and the music options. I got a lot out of doing that, particularly mixing with other people of other musical abilities, not just in my year, but in other years. And had a musical teacher who was great, but didn't really like people, self-taught musicians. So my aim there was, before I even left school, was to kind of convince her that, oh, actually, just because you're a self-taught musician doesn't mean you're not good. So I went and did a cover song on the spot at the final Christmas Cabaret of 2000, and she was just generally gobsmacked. And since then, I've kind of, well, I've not kind of looked back at all. I haven't visited St. Vincent's School since the day I left, which was July 2001. I'd love to go back, but I still have many things to do before I make that trip again.
That brings us nicely onto your music career, Chris, doesn't it? Because music is your passion, isn't it, really?
Absolutely, yeah. I, for some time and for many years, I took up playing the bass guitar and got hold of my very first, well, I actually had the chance to pick up my very first bass when I was 11. And then I didn't see it again until I was 13, and it was nice. It was just this little acoustic bass that was lying around in the music room. And it just happened to be that there was a guy there one day who taught bass and guitar, and he just said, "Oh, you want to be playing?" I said, "Yeah, why not?" So I just picked it up and just played what I could. And then eventually my uncle got me my first bass. It was just a starter kit, but it was good enough. And then I saved up all of my pocket money to buy my very first bass guitar and amplifier and so on. And it worked. But from then on, I started writing songs. I learned a few basics from a bass scale guide that I'd been given as a Christmas present from my mum. And I started writing my own music, but at that time I had no musicians to play with. But it gave me heaps of time to expand on what I already knew to become more or less of a professional musician. From leaving school, I attended Queen Alexandra College, which I didn't really get a lot out of. So I then left there and I attended the Royal National College in Hereford for 3 years. Had a much more successful time there. And it just happened to be that while I was there, there were a lot of bands that noticed that I was playing and doing things, and firstly there was one band who were just playing in the recording studios where I happened to be one day, and they quite liked what I was doing, so it was like, "Well, will you join us?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." And to cut a long story short, along there I was involved in 10 different projects, two of which I formed in 2004, and since then I have been using a friend's studio to remaster and remix and pre-record the bits of the projects that I didn't get time to lie down when I was at college. The first one is a 5-track EP, which is a mix of traditional classic rock and blues, and the other project is a mini covers album which consists of 7 tracks. There's also going to be a bonus walkthrough, talk through kind of interview thing, and all of that, including artwork and little bits and bobs, I'm hoping to have ready by the autumn. So it's very time consuming, but I love everything I do. I don't do any of it for money, purely for interest only.
Well, maybe we could feature one of your tracks on a future podcast, Chris, if you can let Michael have a copy. That would be for everybody to see what you do.
Absolutely, yeah, no problem. There's also a 3-track stream on SoundCloud, which you all can have a listen to. I am hoping to at some point get some stuff up on YouTube and elsewhere, because, you know, I realise not everyone's used to streaming stuff on things like SoundCloud, but it's certainly something I am looking into.
Well, that would be great. Anything you do, let us know, and we can always tell people about it on here. And, you know, you can always put it on the group on Facebook and everything for people to see.
Brilliant, yeah.
And you were also saying you're sort of brushing up on your mobility and possibly going for a guide dog as well. Do you want to sort of finish off with that for us, if you don't mind?
Yeah, 2009, I was still a little apprehensive. I still wanted to be as independent as possible outside just as much as inside. And I, for some time, I'd been wanting a guide dog, but I just didn't know where to turn to. And luckily, it was my local guide dogs who was quite helpful to begin with. And with lots of confidence and coaching, I am currently completing the route to which goes from my home to the post office to my local pub to the bus stop and then back. And then when I've completed that, that will then entail going on a bus to a destination and obviously finding my way to that destination and then finding my way back to the bus stop and getting back on the bus and making sure I get back home safe and sound, of course.
That's brilliant, Chris. And, you know, anybody else who's listening to this, if you've got stories like Chris, you know, that feel free to get in touch and come on and talk about it, because it is your podcast and we love hearing your stories.
I've had a guide dog a couple of years now, Chris. I don't know if you know, you probably see me. And it is, it was actually a life-changing decision. I mean, it makes sense sometimes for some people to, right, you know, it's a natural progression. I was losing a bit of sight, it was just going a bit worse. But I found it was such a hard decision because I could see enough and I could manage. And I found it was that, am I ready to be technically to be a blind person, if you know what I mean, an obvious blind person, because I didn't use a cane unless I was outside my own backyard. So, you know, people have fears. If you have fears and you've got, you know, you want to share or experiences and good things, you know, that's what we're all about, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's what the group and the page are for as well, isn't it? Because, you know, some of us have been there and been through the whole sight loss experience and been through the guide dog experience and the mobility thing, and we can help each other, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I say this to every single person I meet that's visually impaired and so on, and, you know, I always say to them, we're all in this together, and at the end of the day, just because you've got a disability doesn't mean you can't do your dreams or fulfill a life, long-term life goal that you want to fulfill. Just because you've got a disability doesn't mean that you are unable. There is a way around it. And one thing I always find that is absolutely valuable is, you know, there's no reason why you can't do something, but simply finding a way around it, a way around of doing that, you know.
Definitely. And we can all help each other along, can't we? Like you say, talk to each other, and somebody out there will go through the same experience that you're going through at the moment, and, you know, we can all help each other.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's been good to actually catch up with you properly, and a bit more than the 2 minutes, which is what we want, you know, people to come on for. And I'm glad you picked up the gauntlet when I put on Facebook about 2 hours ago, didn't I? Recording tonight, anyone got anything to put on? And you came forward and we managed to get it all set up. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
No problem.
And we'll catch you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. It's really interesting to hear what you've been up to. And as we said before, anybody else, if you want to do an interview with us, be that a long interview or just a couple of minutes, that you want to tell us something interesting about yourselves, your life, your family, contact us, podcast@svopa.co.uk. And now, moving swiftly on, we've got some information about Site Village, which Paul Roberts attended, and he's going to tell you about that.
Yes, and have you ever been to Site Village recently, Jo?
I've never been in my life.
You've been, well, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, Site Village is a large exhibition held mainly in Birmingham every July, but they also do one in London and usually a northern one in Manchester, or it was York last year. And in fact, there is one coming up in Manchester on the 24th of September, so if you're local, why not go along? But Paul will tell you about it and what this year's was like. I've managed to get hold of Paul Roberts. He went to Site Village the other day, which is the big visual impairment accessibility exhibition held in Birmingham. And there's also a small one in London. And there's one on, I think, 24th of September in Manchester as well. So, Paul, welcome.
Hi, Mike, and everyone else.
And you went to Site Village this year. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the exhibition and sort of what generally people expect to find?
Yes, well, I did my sort of biannual trip to Site Village in Birmingham, which these days is in the new Bingley Hall in Hockley Circus. Not a bad venue, except it's noisier because everyone seems to be closer together. However, I went down on the Tuesday, the whatever date it was, 16th, and had a really good time, went for a wander around. One of the stands I visited was Cobalt to see what products they have. And a lot of their products have... you know, voice synthesizer on them, but because they're made sort of cheaply, as it were, they sell quite cheaply, so they're quite affordable for most people. And they've got their range of microwaves. They've got the microwave, which is also doubles up as a conventional oven. They also have the talking jug. They also sell a Monopoly board, a Braille one, which is based not on London, it's based on somewhere in America, I think. They have the Connect Four game, which has the yellow counters with holes in them so that they can be identified by the blind person. So for the hell of it, I bought one. It might come in handy. And they are also in the process of making a memo recorder. It's not on sale yet, but they had a couple there. I didn't actually see them, but they were telling me about it when I was chatting to the guy on the stand. Also, I went to visit Boombox Plus, and I bought one of their products, the Boombox, the small one with the two speakers at either end. Also, they have a radio on them, which is not brilliant, but it's okay. And there's a memory stick facility, which is very good. And, of course, it runs on batteries. I also went to the RNIB stand because I wanted to buy the new digital recorder they brought out, which is like a round green thing. I forgot the exact name, where you can record a number of messages, you know, phone numbers and things. It only allows you to record up to 12 minutes maximum. Not 12 minutes per message, but 12 minutes in total, which doesn't sound a lot. But for recording numbers and addresses, it's handy. So I bought one of those. I'm very pleased with it. I've just got mine now, but not used it fully. I also visited a couple of companies, such as Blazy Engineering and also Humanware, who do a lot of Braille displays. Of course, their products were considerably more expensive. They are anything up to £8,000, probably maximum. But there are a couple of portable Braille displays you can buy, which are just under the 1,000, which is not too bad really, but still for most people probably quite expensive. And I had a look at one of the handheld ones, which is handy probably for using with an iPhone, for example, which you could certainly do. I also went to visit Sight and Sound, and things are pretty similar there. They've got the still selling Jaws. I think 14 is the latest version. I know 15 is on its way at some point. I'm still currently using 12, which is serving my needs at the moment. I had a wander around, and there was a lot of people there. It is a very noisy environment now at the new venue, unlike the Clarendon Suites, which is where it was prior to the new Bingley Hall. But I was surprised that there weren't as many companies there as normal, because up until a couple of years ago, Site Village was a three-day event in Birmingham, but now it's a two-day event, and it doesn't seem to have as many exhibitors as it once did. I had heard comments about perhaps it's not as good as it was, as it once was, which is a shame, because the Birmingham one is the biggest of the events. You know, they have the other ones in London and Manchester. The London one's 5th and 6th of November this year, just for anyone who's interested, although I can't remember the venue. But certainly there is the Manchester one on the 24th of September, and I think they do have a couple of other ones around the year. But the exhibition seemed quite good. There were a number of people going about. It was very busy on the Tuesday, and it was worthwhile going. I tend to do 1 year on, 1 year off, because although technology moves fast, in some instances, if you go down every year, you're not going to get much difference. I also went to see the Georgie phone, which I know I think we probably talked about, where it is touchscreen and you do the double tapping, but all the buttons go from left to right. So you've got one long button along the top and the next underneath, and it's supposed to be a little easier, perhaps a little more user-friendly for those who perhaps are a little bit hesitant about using the touchscreen phones. I thought it was quite good, actually. I managed to, once I got the knack of double tapping, I managed to get onto a link with their taxi numbers, and then double tapped it again and got the list of about three different local taxi fares in the area. So that was quite good. And, I enjoyed having a play about with that. I'm thinking to myself of getting an iPhone at some point. Still thinking about it, though. But, I had a look at that. They gave me a bit of a demonstration on that one. And, so it was a very worthwhile trip, and I'm sure anyone who did go will have hopefully got something from it. And the other thing I did see, I have seen one of these machines before, but I didn't have a pair of headphones at the time. It was the talking ATM machine from Barclays Bank. And, in fact, these are mentioned on the InfoSound magazine, and they did make a point of saying that sadly there'd be no real money in the machines. Well, there was money, but it was actually Monopoly money. But I had a go with the noise and possibly the fact that the headphone that I was using, which they were giving these earpieces away, and they were, every time you used an earpiece, you got to keep it. Not sure if the earpiece was particularly good anyway, apart from the noise, but the speech was clear on it, and they're very good. And of course, no matter what bank you use, you can still use the Barclays ATMs, and there are other banks who are rolling them out. I think Lloyds are rolling them out at some point. So that's a very good machine to use, and the buttons are quite big and very easy to operate, and the speech is clear. It's a female voice. I'm not sure if there's any variation on it, but certainly the one I saw had a female voice, and it's clear enough, as much as I could hear it with all the noise. But yes, it was well worth seeing that, because that's something that's going to help blind people in the future if indeed they want to access cash machines.
Yeah, so thanks very much, Paul. It's always good to talk to you, and hopefully we're going to see you in Manchester in a couple of weeks as well. So
yes, I'm looking forward to that. Yes, that'll be great.
And we'll obviously might get some more information off people as well. So look forward to catching you soon, and thanks very much for coming and talking about Sight Village, Paul.
No problem. Thank you. Speak soon.
Why not follow us on Twitter at SVOPA?
Well, thanks, Paul. And as Michael said, if you ever get the chance to go to Sight Village, I must do it myself sometime, but never seem to get around to it. Go along and let us know what your experience is. And if you buy anything, let us know if it's good equipment or, you know, whether you'd recommend it. That would also be a good thing to do.
Yeah, it would actually. We are looking at other sections, and even things like product reviews and tips and tricks, all that sort of thing, we're looking for, aren't we? Because we had some of the tips from Sarah last year.
We did, definitely. So, yeah, if you go and buy something that's really useful, and, you know, if it's a reasonable price as well, because, you know, not everybody's got loads of money, but, you know, just let us know what you think of it and we can pass it along. Or you could even record it yourself and send it to us, podcast@svopa.co.uk. Do your own little review.
So what we're going to do is go on to a new section called Around the School in 10 Lessons.
And now for our new section, Around the School in 10 Lessons.
Yep, so the first lesson, we're going to be looking at the sort of the Caulfield. It was Louis Vale on the other side as well, wasn't it? Which I think
it was.
I think it's mainly just called Caulfield now, if I'm right. And the sort of the infant area going down towards the infant classrooms. I know you didn't really have that much to do with them much, did you, Jo?
I didn't. My only experience of it really is obviously in passing when I was there, but is sort of latterly, you know, going to the reunions and everything, because we use Caulfield for beds, don't we?
We do. So, unfortunately, it's going to be mainly me this time, but next month we're actually going to be looking at the main corridor and, like, the groups and things on there, which you had more experience of, I think, Joe.
Yeah.
So it'd be your turn.
Yeah, so that's going to cover sort of the front hall area, Bridgman, for any girls who were at Duke, because that was the junior girls, or anybody more recent, as it's changed now with the little, you know, the ensuite rooms and everything. So whatever, if you've got something to say about it, some memories, let us know and we can include it.
And again, if you've got any comments on what I'm going to talk about today, and these are just thoughts and my sort of memories a little bit, you know, let us know, because we'll have a little review on the next episode on what we've said about the school this time. So what we'll do, I'll start at the far end, which is really the Caulfield section, which I sort of, when I were there, it was 1977, I think, if I'm right, it'd only been open a couple of years by then. And there were small, usually two-bedroom sort of dormitories, or like small rooms, with a lounge in between the two dormitory sections. None of it was en suite. Like, it's not really en suite now, though, is it?
It isn't, no.
It's the one section what isn't, so the little sort of communal bathrooms. And when I were there, because it was infants, it was actually joint boys and girls as well. And so you basically had that, and you went downstairs, and I'm also going to think about what changed, you know, when we've been back for reunions as well.
Yeah.
So you've got a dining room downstairs, or it was a dining room. It's more of a lounge now, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And I can remember being in that dining room in 77, or was it 78, I think, when we had all the power cuts, and sort of stuck in there with candles on. For a few nights, because you know, no point going into the lounge or anything like that. And it was just set up with about half a dozen tables, because there wasn't room in for the settees and things anyway, because there was too many kids. And there was, well,
I was going to say, so who were your care staff then, who looked after you in the infants?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and to be completely honest, I don't really remember.
Do you know?
It was, oh, it might have been, I think it was Sue and Marie, to be fair. I'm pretty sure it was, but I genuinely don't remember.
Right, come on, guys. You've got to email in now and put us out of our misery. Let us know if Michael's right, if it was Sue and Marie, or if you remember any other care staff.
It was Sister Mary, who was who was in charge at the time.
Mm.
And in fact, thinking back, first time I went back to the reunion, and the room I was given was actually what was her room, Sister Mary's room, when I was there. So, yeah. But it's weird, you know, especially when you go back and you think, yeah, I slept in this room, or I remember that room. And one of the things they had downstairs as well was a quiet room when I was in there. I can remember being in there listening to music and listening to stories. And then a few years ago when we went back, that has actually become a sensory room. So it had loads of lights and the bubble tubes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And now that particular room is completely empty. I don't know what's happened to the sensory equipment. It's probably somewhere else. And that room's not used anymore. It's just bare. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to know your memories of the Caulfield, Louis Vale section.
Because wasn't when I was there, and I started in 83 and left in 87, and if I'm right, it was either Caulfield or Louis Vale, I don't know which, that was for the, what you would say now, the fifth year senior girls. So your last year at St Vincent's, the girls spent in one of those groups, and I can't remember which one it was, because it changed when I went into fifth year. You didn't do that then, you went into what was Myers Court.
I'll be honest, I can't remember. I thought you were still above near the front hall, but I can't remember.
No, because Bridgman was above the front hall, and that was for the junior girls when I was there. Mm. And then the senior girls, the main lot of us were in Keller, but we'll move on to that in another lesson. But the last year, because the eldest boys were in the lodge, the eldest girls were in either Caulfield or Louis Vale, but I'm sure somebody will know that and tell us which it was.
Yeah. And that was around the 1987-88 year. So, you know, let us know, you know, put us right. So then you move down to like a big open area. As you're walking back, you'd come down the stairs, you'd gone through the doors towards where the infant classrooms were. And when I first started, it was like an infant play area. And I think, if I remember rightly, some people said they were classrooms before that, you know, back in maybe the early 70s and 60s, sort of the big area. And then the soft play moved in there. You remember the soft play being in there?
I do remember the soft play there, yeah.
That moved up there when it used to. That's where I remember it being installed, about 79 or 80.
Right.
It was installed there. It was there for years.
Because even the soft play has changed over the years.
It has. It's moved around a few times, hasn't it?
It's moved around, but it's not the same. When we were there, you had the swamp, the forest, and the hill, I think it was, we called it.
Yep.
So three different areas, but now there's not nearly as much.
No, I think they've got, it's now in what, well, no, we shouldn't cover this time. So we'll just basically say, I think if I remember rightly, they've just got, I think the swamp might still be there, possibly, and the hill. And there's like a bar across the middle.
There is, yeah.
And there was a big spiky ball there as well. Well, and that has moved, but we'll come on to that probably next time. And after that particular area where the soft play was put in, is now again a sort of a play area, sort of lounge area, just some seats at one end and a few soft things and a few climbing frames and some space hoppers.
Yes. About happy memories.
It does, yes. And they're not school memories, they're reunion memories.
Yes, they are. So, you know, come along and you too can find out.
Yeah. So then you sort of go through there. You had the toilets on, which I remember last time, and you know, they're so tiny when you see the children's little loos now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
And then you go past the door to the swimming pool, which we'll cover the pool in the later lesson as well. And then there's the infants' classrooms. Do you think should we stop there, actually, and include them next time? Because people can give memories on the classrooms for next time, can't they?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So next time, the infant classrooms, as was, I'm assuming, is it now or is it?
It's not. Let's see if anyone can remember what it is now.
Yeah. And then we're going to Myers Court, as was, but isn't now.
Yep.
And then Bridgman, which is still in existence now, but in a different guise, the front hall and all of that corridor. Yeah. What are your memories, guys? Get in touch.
Yeah, and we're going to go all the way down to the top of the corridor where the dining room is. So if you remember where the old gong was, we're going to go to that next time. So let's have your thoughts, memories, and let's make it somewhat bigger next time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is the end of the lesson. I need a school bell now, don't I?
You do, actually.
Right, class dismissed. Right, we're going to hand over to Jim again, and he, on our behalf, attended the prize-giving ceremony at school, and as an association, we actually donate a prize called the Paul Lawton Award, which was given to the head pupil this year. But we also gave out some vouchers to the leavers as well. So I'm going to hand over to Jim and he can tell you about it.
Hi, this is Jim Moran. First of all, can I say how great it was to see so many people at the last reunion. It was, I think it was the biggest ever. Lots of people who I remember or maybe been in contact with me because of the newsletter. So it's good to see you all. Reason I'm for this article is because I was invited in by the school only last week to do the prize giving. It was on the Friday the 18th of June. And it was great to go back to prize day. I remember my own prize days from school. I didn't really win very much. I think I only got one prize ever in all the time I was there. And it was quite interesting, really, that the biggest room in the school at the moment, of course, is the chapel. And what really threw me was they turned all the benches around sideways so they could get more people into the chapel. So it was really good. Met quite a lot of parents as well, because sat down for a cup of tea before prize giving and met a few parents at the school who come along for prize day, which again is a change from the time I was at school. And it was great to hear their experiences, and a little sad as well, because parents nowadays have to fight an awful hard battle to get their kids into St. Vincent's, and it shouldn't be like that, but there you go, that's the way it is, and hopefully we might be able to influence that in the future. Certainly needs to be influenced. When it takes sometimes 4 or 6 years to get your child into school, that's a waste of time. You know, integrated education is great for those who love it, but for those who can't cope, it's not a good state of affairs at all. But anyway, that's the seriousness over. There was a series of prizes that I was able to present. First of all, it was to the school leavers. And for this year, the SOFA have actually put forward a prize, a small gift for each school leaver. So the 4 school leavers leaving this year, and I hope I pronounced her name properly, is Royson Gardner Poole. Next school leaver was Victoria Moore. Next school leaver was Megan McCormick. And Robert Whittle. So good luck to all 4 of those. We did hope that many of the school leavers will again rejoin us or leave us with their details so that we can actually make sure that they get all the information from SOFA. The music prize went to Chloe Nelson, so well done, Chloe. And it's good to see that the school's got a very strong music programme, that there was a few musical interludes, extremely well played by several of the pupils, but well done to Chloe. Special mention for a climbing award that, as part of my role at Bradbury Fields, we worked with St. Vincent's last year, and we put forward a climbing programme for kids in Liverpool. And Rhianne Rattou had a very special mention because she got to the European Games and actually got a bronze there. But she also got a couple of golds in the year for climbing projects within the UK. And she's part of now a climbing team for GB, and hopefully may be part of the Olympics within the next 4 years. So well done to Rhianne. The Joe Lambton Award Senior Cup went to Connor Corston, and it was presented by Joe himself, who was round at the school. And Primary Mobility Cup, Harris Malik, I'm sure I pronounced that name right, Malik Connor Smith, and that was the Shannon Independence Award went to Megan McCormick. Francis Berry Bold Award has been changed this year, and it goes for it's given for Assistive Technology Prize, and that again was awarded by the SOFA, and that went to Victoria Moore. So well done, Victoria. Here's another name I remember, the Catherine Cooper Award. Catherine passed away several years ago, and her parents actually put forward an award for overall effort and determination, and that went to Roisin Gardner Poole again. She comes up again as one of the leavers. So well done to Roisin. The Paul Otten Award Prize, which was actually donated by SOFA, was awarded to the head pupil for 2012 to 2013, and that was to Catherine Leach. And again, well done to Catherine. And they were all the prizes that were involved with the SOFA. So we've still got a really good contact with school with the prizes that we present each year. Your committee decided this year to award the 4 new prizes to the school leavers, and that was a small cash prize to each school leaver. And the idea really is to encourage people to be aware of SOFA and what we stand for. It was, for the first time at Prize Day, it was great to be able to have the opportunity to talk to the ex-pupils or the pupils there at the moment, the staff and the parents, to invite them back to our AGM. So hopefully some of them will decide to come next year and swell our numbers even greater. So till next time, have yourselves a good time. From Jim Moran, cheers.
Why not email us at podcast@svupa.co.uk?
Thanks, Jim. And now on to our interview with Josie Lynch. So a lot of the girls will remember Josie better, I would imagine, because she looked after the infants, juniors and senior girls, I think, in her 20-odd years at St Vincent's. She's had a really interesting life and she's going to tell us all about it. Okay, so now we've got the lovely Josie Lynch, who's agreed to do an interview with us and tell us about some of her memories. So, hiya, Josie.
Hello, Jo. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
I'm very well, thank you, yeah.
It's good to get you on Skype and get you on the technology, because I know you were worried about it when we were talking at the reunion, weren't you?
Well, I'm here. I don't know whether it'll work, but I'm here. That's a big thing. Go on, keep going in case you get
left
somewhere.
Well, what we'll do is we'll start off with, you know, before you got your job at St Vincent's. So would you tell us a little bit about yourself in the early years?
Okay. I was born in London from Irish parents who came over, lived in London. I was born and lived there until I was going on six. And then we moved, Mum, my dad and myself, I'm an only child, we moved up to Manchester to live near my mother's twin brother and his wife, and they, after that, had two boys. I went to school in Manchester, initially to a Franciscan school run by Franciscan fathers, and then we had the 11 plus in those days, which neither of you will know about because you're too young.
Thank you.
I didn't get a grammar school place at the 11 plus. There were three sort of stages, and you could have grammar, technical, or secondary. And of course, like everything else, I went for the mid one. I never managed the high place in anything. So I got a technical school place in a school called St. Joseph's Technical High School for Girls, which was run by the Sisters of Charity. I started there in 1965 and ran on from 1970. In 1969, I decided it was the year before I was due to leave school. I was 15, and I decided that I wanted to be a nursery nurse. So I didn't go anywhere. I actually applied to do the NNEB training, which was the nursery nursing staff at the time. And I didn't get an interview. I was a bit perturbed because I loved children, absolutely loved children. Spent a lot of time out of school babysitting and taking young children to parks, etc., etc. But I didn't get an interview, and there was nothing you could do about it. But I did query it, and they said that, no, I just hadn't passed. And I thought it was rather strange, because we had a theory paper first. And I thought it was a bit odd that I didn't pass the theory paper, not that I'm exceptionally bright or anything, but the theory paper wasn't very difficult. And after a little bit of investigation, it transpired that I didn't get the interview to do the NNAB simply because I had no brothers and sisters, which I thought was a bit unfair because, you know, that wasn't my fault and it wasn't anyone else's fault either. Anyway, I didn't get it. So I spoke to the head teacher at St. Joseph's at the time, who was a Sister of Charity, Sister Margaret, her name was, and I asked her, you know, was there anywhere that they had that I could go and do a nursing training? And at the same time as all that, I also was considering entering the Sisters of Charity. So I was going to become one of the Sisters of Charity. Sister Margaret decided that I should go on what we call the Vocations Weekend, which happened to be being held at St. Vincent's that year. So off I go on my vocations weekend to St. Vincent's, and we all stepped in those on the trees that you will remember. That's where we all slept, and we all told ghost stories. Well, I didn't, but they did. And one of the sisters that you probably both might know is Sister Maureen Tinkler, who used to tell us the ghost stories as we all squealed in the beds. And part of that weekend, we went round various places. One of them was to the Carmelite Monastery up the road, and the other was to a children's home called Druid's Cross, which is in the south of Liverpool. I went back to St. Joseph's, and I said to Sister Margaret, I wasn't sure about joining the Sisters of Charity, but I certainly wanted to go and work in Druid's Cross. It was a children's home. We'd been there, we'd visited, and I loved it. So, that was my decision made as far as I was concerned. I was going to Druid's Cross. Only Sister Margaret had other ideas, and she decided that I wasn't going to Druid's Cross because I needed to do some more exams, and I assured her that I didn't really need to do any more exams. She wanted to go on and do A-levels. No, I didn't want to do A-levels. I wanted to go and work with children. I'd grown up since I was four. If people asked me what I wanted to do, I always said, I want to be a nun and work with children. So when I found what I wanted to do, I thought, well, I don't need to do any more exams. But Sister Margaret decided I did. And I couldn't go to Druid's Cross because there wouldn't be the opportunities there to go in the evenings to do some night classes. And you didn't argue too much at that stage. So I said, okay, if that had to be it, I couldn't argue with her. But then she said to me, you can go and work at St. Vincent. Now, having spent the weekend there, I knew that it was a school for blind and partially sighted children. And I can remember as clearly, and unfortunately Sister Margaret is no longer with us, but I can remember as clear as day saying to her, Sister Margaret can't do that. And she said, why not, Josephine? And I said, because they can't see me. That was my reason for not going to work at St. Vincent. Because they can't see me. Needless to say, in 1970, I ended up at St. Vincent and spent 23 years, very, very happy years at St. Vincent with all those children that couldn't see me.
Well, some of us could.
But it didn't matter to me whether you could or you couldn't. In 1973, I went on and did my childcare training down south in a place called Wallingford, which was a lovely, lovely old house, fabulous. It was right on the Thames, so in this sort of weather, we just sat on the lawn having the lectures, and it was heavenly, it was lovely. But I was desperately, I can't say homesick because I wasn't, I was St. Vincent's sick, and I just cried every night. I cried, I wanted to get back to St. Vincent's. That must take me 3 months. And then I did various other, while I was there, you had to do placements. So I went on various placements and I did various things with children with cerebral palsy and children with epilepsy and children with hearing. I did the whole gamut of things, but nothing matched. I had to get back to St. Vincent's. So with a 15-month training and back I went to St. Vincent's, and the 3 years from 1970 to 73, I spent in the infant with Sister Mary, who was in charge at the time. And then I got back and I was given the junior girls group. So that was where Joanne and everybody else, Adele, Gemma, Jane, Sue Longworth, Tanya Pratt, everybody came in at that stage. That was where I met everybody, and it was a fabulous time. I mean, maybe not for them, but I had a fabulous time. Then I was moved from the juniors to the seniors. I spent quite a lot of time in the seniors, and then back down again to run a group with young and not so young children in. Until I left in 1993, but by 1990, I felt that I couldn't not that I couldn't give anymore, but I had nothing left now to give. I was doing, it became a job. I think that's probably what happened. It actually became a job, and it never, ever been a job. I felt that I was doing it, and I hoped that I wasn't doing anyone a disservice, but it was just, you went to work. Because by then, of course, in my early days at St. Vincent's, the children stayed, and some of them stayed from one end of the term to the other because of the children from Germany, and we had them from different countries as well as various parts of Great Britain. You know, we had them from Wales, and we had them from down south, and we had them from up north. And so, but earlier on, we had people from the Cameroons, and we had from Germany. So people stayed, the children stayed, and it meant that we were all the time, except for holiday times when the children went home. And we moved from that to the children going home most weekends, which meant we got weekends off. And that was lovely. And it was lovely. It was lovely for the children, and it was lovely for staff as well. But then I began to feel that I was just doing a job, I think. Not that I ever want to go back to working weekends, I don't mean that, but it just became a job, and I thought, must be time to move. But there was always somebody there that, I don't know if either of you remember, a little boy called Jordan Elms. Jordan, I think, was probably younger than either of you, and he had other difficulties, and I just idolized him, and he followed me, but he didn't follow me, I took him wherever, because he was a monkey, and in class he would create, and they would come and look for me, and I would take him out of class, and I would take him home with me, and I, you know, and there was always someone that, you know, I felt, no, I can't go yet. So that happened for a few years, and so in the end, a position came up at Vision Aid in Bolton. And Vision Aid was run by one of the past pupils, which wasn't past at that stage, but she is now, Kylie. Her mum ran Vision Aid, Leslie Green, and she offered me a post at Vision Aid. So I went there to support the parent of, because Vision Aid is a charity supporting visually impaired parents, well, children and parents, but really the parents of visually impaired children with additional disabilities. And having spent 23 years at St. Vincent's, I spent 23 months at Vision Aid because the funding ended. And then I was out of work for about 8 months. And I have to say, I was very, very happy out of work. It was a very nice 8 months, but obviously one can't stay out of work for the whole of their life. And I was lucky because I was doing my counselling course. I'd already done at St. Vincent's, Frank McFarlane had taught me Braille, and I had done the Braille exam in Leeds and got it. And I then did the counselling course. So I needed hours for my counselling. And I approached Jim Moran at Bradley Field, was then LVFC, and asked him if I could possibly do some hours counselling for them. So Jim is always up for a challenge, and he's always ready to help, and they got me some counselling hours. And then a position came up for a support worker, which I applied for and got. And I started work as a support worker for Bradbury Fields in Knowsley. And I spent some years doing that until the Liverpool Local Authority wanted a mobility officer. And Jim knew that they wanted a mobility officer, so he sent me off on training to do mobility. Because I already have the child bit, and he reckoned if I got the mobility bit, he could apply for the contract. So off I go, yeah, off I go on my mobility course. And I became the mobility officer for Liverpool Local Authority for Children in Mainstream Schools. And that was brilliant. I spent a couple of years doing that. But then a post became available for a rehab worker in Knowsley. So back to Nosy I go and apply for that job. And I got it. Whilst I enjoyed the mobility for children, I didn't feel I was the right one for it. Not because of the mobility side of it, but because it was a job that was just starting. Nobody had done it. And you had to make your own of it. Now, I can work and happily work for and do anything, but I haven't got a good imagination. So expecting me to imagine what to do is not my forte at all. Tell me what to do and I can do it. But, you know, set up something, no, that's not for me. So I went back to Knowsley to do rehab because I sort of had all the individual bits, even though I didn't have the full piece of paper. And I spent until last year. A year ago, we're on the 22nd, and I think I left on the 25th of July last year. I left Knowsley to go to Ireland to look after my goddaughter's two babies. And, just sold up, gave up work, did everything to go over to look after the two children, who were absolutely beautiful. But for me, it didn't work simply because I was too haunted. I missed Liverpool desperately. And I just couldn't stay. I knew that I had made the wrong move. So I had to say to my relations over there, look, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And I came back home. But when I was going over, Helen, who is currently doing the iClinic liaison post at St. Paul's down at the Liverpool Royal, had said to me that she was probably going to retire. So just before I announced to the world that I was on my way back, one of the staff in Knowsley, who is a friend of mine, rang me and said, Josie, Helen's retiring, apply for her job. And I said, well, I don't know if I can do that. So she said, well, why not? And I said, well, I don't really know why I can't do it either. So she said, right, well, I'll get them to send you the application form. So they sent me the application form online, and I thought, I can't lose anything by filling it in. So I filled in the application form, and then I rang Jim, who at that time was chief executive, it's now Phil, but it was Jim. And he said to me, just fill in the application form, he said, and see where it goes. There will be others applying, he said, you've got a lot of experience, but there will be others as well. Just see how it goes. Okay. So I filled in the application form and I sent it back over, and all I could do was say a prayer, because it was fortunate it was Fabry Field, simply because when I left for Ireland, I literally threw out every bit of paper that I had ever had. I never, ever expected to be coming back. So I threw out all my school certs, all my counselling, all my everything. I have nothing at all to prove that I ever did a thing in my life. Nothing. So I knew that Jim and Bradbury Fields knew what I did, but I had nothing to prove it. And I thought, well, if I don't get this, it's going to be fun. But I knew also that if I didn't get it, I would have gone into home care. Jim then said to me, you know, this job might only be 20 hours. And I said, that's fine. 20 hours for me with people who are visually impaired are far better than 120 hours with people who aren't. So we had the interview. The interview wasn't meant to be until the week after I came back. But then they decided that I was due to come over on holiday, and they decided that they'd have the interview, and it was going to be the week before. And I, by that stage, had decided that I was coming over the week before anyway. So it happened that I was here for the interview, because otherwise it would have meant coming over the week before for a day and going back and coming over again. So I came over, had the interview, and lo and behold, fortunately, very fortunately, with all credit to the Lord, I got the job. So I am now the itinerant liaison officer down at St. Paul's for the last 3 months. It's different. It's slower, but it's different. I gave a little feel the week before, to some of the consultants, doctors, optometrists, opticians, and nurses, just to tell them who I was, what I was, and all the rest of it. And the referrals are just starting to come in. When they do come in, they come in very hot and heavy. But it's a different job. It's a totally different job. I can bring into it, fortunately, though, the rehab experience, you know, that I've got, which is good. So that's where it is to date.
That's fantastic.
It's been a good life. It has. I have no regrets at all. I regret having gone to Ireland, but that's because I know that I have upset people by coming away again. You know, so I know that, yeah. You know, I have upset family by coming away. So I regret having gone. That was the only regret I actually have.
That's not bad for a life, is it, really? One regret.
It's not bad. No, Most of us have lots.
Yeah, when I said that to, who did I? I think it was Adele I said it to, and she said, "Oh, get over yourself." She said, "If I could have said I only had one regret in life, I'd be delighted."
Yeah.
And it was absolutely lovely at the reunion, because last year at the reunion, we were all saying, "Tarata, you were." But obviously, like I said, things don't always go the way we expect. But having that Friday night with you at the hotel, and
that was lovely.
It was the one time we could all sit. I mean, you know, sit and relax and just chat over things. And it was nice to see like Jane, who obviously we haven't seen for years, and catch up with Adele and Gemma. And it was just lovely to see you there and to have.
It was lovely, and it would be nice to see a few more people. Just coming that night before, because the reunion is lovely, but then there's so many actors that you don't really get the opportunity, or I don't get the opportunity to speak to everybody, you know, because there's so many.
No, you don't. We don't as the committee either, because you're not busy doing the AGM and making sure that everything runs as smoothly as possible. Yeah. You leave sometimes. I mean, this year, you kind of leave. It was really busy this year, and you leave thinking, "I didn't speak to such a body, and I didn't speak to such a body." You know,
and it's really growing, isn't it? Though
it is.
The reunion is really growing. It's brilliant to see.
And I think the Friday night will now be something we look at. You know, last year Adele said she was coming over early, so a few of us said, "Right, let's book the travel lodge." But I think next year, as soon as we get a date. And it's going to be September when we get a date now, because the school's finished and unfortunately didn't get a date before it finished. But as soon as we get it, I think people will come Friday and make it more relaxing.
Well, that was a brilliant interview, Josie, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It would be lovely to speak to you more often, Joanne.
Oh, God, don't call me Joanne. Nobody calls me Joanne anymore.
Nobody calls me Josephine anymore either. Well, one of the opticians of St. Paul's does actually. But it's lovely to speak to you more often anyway. And now that you can somehow get to me on Skype, I don't know how it happens, but you must be able to.
Definitely.
So I will keep my computer alive and see if I hear you.
Yeah, do. Definitely, that would be nice, that, to keep in touch.
Yes, it would be lovely.
Yeah.
So thank you both very, very much indeed.
Absolute pleasure, and I hope to see you again soon.
And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Join us at one, or two, or all of them.
Firstly, we have a get-together in Manchester, for anybody who's interested. We keep saying that we want local get-togethers, so we're kicking it off with a Manchester get-together, which is on August the what, Michael?
It's on August the 10th, a week on Saturday.
Okie dokie. So they're all meeting at around about 12 o'clock,
at the Palladium, which is a Wetherspoons pub. But it's very near to Oxford Road Station. Now, we can always, I won't be there, but Michael will be. We can always arrange for people to be met or, you know, to make sure that everybody gets to the pub okay.
Yeah, we can do that. It's not a problem at all. Most people, if you're coming by train, a lot of trains go through Oxford Road if you're like Liverpool and that sort of end anyway. If you come into Piccadilly, let us know, or Victoria, we can sort that out for you. I'm sure we can meet you and get you there safely. So, you know, just give me a ring, 0161 287 1841 or 07930 444 656, so at least I know I can meet you there.
We've already got quite a bit of interest. Obviously, Michael and Karen are going. Danielle is going. Paul Roberts is going. Marie Kennedy and her husband Mark are going, I think, or hoping to go. Yep. And we've other names as well,
we have Pat Scanlon, Tanya Price, and there's one or two of us who've shown an interest as well. So, you know, we've got a good number already.
Yeah, if you live locally or you're prepared to travel a little bit, I don't expect you just for an afternoon to travel too far. But, you know, if you want to come along and join the guys, they would love to see you. And also, if you want to organise or be part of organising a local event, whether that's just a meet-up like this for an afternoon, for a meal, for a drink, or whether you want to, you know, go temping, bowling or anything, whatever you can think of, get in touch, podcast@svopa.co.uk, and we'll help you set it up.
We will. We'll push it on the website and the podcast. So, you know, go do it. Go organise something.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to not really the main events. It's just other weekend breaks, relaxing weekends, which we've got planned, obviously, for the coming 12 months. So we've got the Belmont Hotel, as you know, running from the 1st to the 4th of November this year. Quite a few people interested and already booked, which is really good.
That's in Llandudno. You need to book direct with the hotel, quoting SVOPA, and Michael will give you the number and the prices for the rooms.
Yep, the phone number is 01492 877 770. Prices there are £35 per person per night for dinner, bed and breakfast. And like we said, quote SVOPA. And also we've got the Bull Hotel in Peterborough. That's running from the 7th to the 10th of March. The 10th is my birthday, so obviously you can bring cards and presents with you. For your chairman. That is looks a very nice hotel. I mean, I was looking at some pictures of it the other day on Google Earth, and it looks quite nice. And that is £40 per person per night for dinner, bed and breakfast if you're in a twin or a double. And unfortunately, it's £50 per person per night for a single. But at the end of the day, if you've got friends coming, you can always, you know, if you want to share, that's always an option anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, and it does look like it. I mean, Jane Redfern Gray checked the place out for us, and it's a listed building, and she said it is very, very nice. And she did say that the price we got was very, very good for the quality of hotel that it is. So if you live in the Peterborough area, or again, if you're prepared to travel for a break, then, you know, go along and join in the fun.
Yeah, so to book, you need to ring 01733 561364, and again quote SVOPA. We've also arranged as well, because a couple of people mentioned it, that with the RNIB being in Peterborough, which they're not that near, it's a little bit of distance, but we can sort that. But people had said they'd like to do a tour around the RNIB or get some products demonstrations. So if people can be there or want to be there early on the Friday, we've actually booked in between 2 and 4 o'clock on the Friday afternoon with them. So that was arranged last week when I was down in Birmingham at the RNIB AGM.
So we've also more or less decided that the break at the end of 2014 will be in York. So there was a lot of interest on the group in having a break in York. So if anybody's any ideas for that, if you know of any good hotels that are accessible, not too expensive, you know, you want to jump on board and help us organise breaks, then feel free, because we like having help, don't we? And we like, if somebody's local to the area and they want to go and check a place out to see what it's like, talk to the staff and then give us feedback, that's always appreciated.
It is, you know, make our life easier.
Definitely.
Right, so we look forward to seeing the guys who are coming to Manchester, like I said, on the 10th. I mean, I'm saying it's a week of Saturday, but it does depend when this goes out. And, you know, we're just going to have a great time, just a good chance, a few beers, and just a chance to meet up. And for some of us, it's going to be quite a long day because I'm going to the theatre in the evening as well. So that should be quite nice. That's it for the events anyway for this month. And hopefully we will see a few of you in Manchester next week. And we hope to see you as well at some of the upcoming events.
So that's it for episode 15. I hope you've all enjoyed the content as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. We had a lot more for this month than we first anticipated.
We did, actually. We thought we've not got much. It's going to be a nice, quiet, easy listening one for you. But there's a few things came up, so we thought we'd get them in for you. And yeah. So, yeah, until next month as well, we're thinking of possibly adding a bit of a holiday theme because it's August or the end of August, September. And some people have been on holiday and be thinking for next year. So if you've got any holiday tips and things, let us know for next month as well.
Yep, holiday tips or places to recommend that are maybe in this country that are very accessible, where the staff are really helpful, where the guide dog friendly, anything like that, let us know.
Yeah, so let's say thank you to people who've taken part this this episode. So we'd like to thank Chris and Jim Moran for the two sections he's provided for us.
And thanks, of course, to Josie Lynch for her great interview.
And also for Paul Roberts for attending Site Village and being able to give us a bit of feedback on the event this time as well.
And, of course, thanks to all of you who comment on posts on the group or the page on Facebook. And you get in touch to give us your news. Keep it coming. We love hearing from you.
We do. We love doing it. It's just been good fun. And just think we've been doing this for over 12 months now, Jo.
I know. It's mad, isn't it? It doesn't seem that long.
It doesn't. And I can't believe we're on to 15 episodes.
I know. It's great. So all that remains for us to do now is to give you the all-important contact details. So, of course, we've mentioned the Facebook page and group an awful lot. So if you search SVOPA on Facebook, if you're not already a member of the group, then you'll find us there. You can follow us on Twitter at SVOPA. We don't have an awful lot on there, do we, at the moment?
No, I mean, pretty much the Facebook posts get sent to there as well.
Yeah.
And you can email podcast@svopa.co.uk. Check out the older podcasts on the website, www.svopa.co.uk.
You can follow us on Audioboo. We have an SVOPA account on Audioboo. You can also follow Michael. Yep. You've not been doing a lot, Michael, lately?
I've not, actually, no. It's Ike Allen, I-K-E-A-L-L-E-N.
You can follow me on Audioboo. I'm joe.fishwick.
And Joe is always booing.
Yeah.
So you can ring me on 07930-444-656 or on my landline 0161-287-1841. And if you are coming next week, obviously let me know so I know who to expect and who to meet at the station.
We also still have CDs of the first 12 podcasts left. If anybody wants one, they're £3 each and you can contact Michael and we'll put them in to you.
We will. And so, without further ado, we'll just say ta-ra until next month. So, it's bye from me.
And bye from me.
Bye.